I mean, it's all such delicious fun to watch all of the, particularly the MSNBC hosts, where they were talking about just the morality of this decision that NBC had made to hire her, and then how grateful they were that NBC ultimately listened to the entire team, because they were unanimous in their outcry and their outrage that this woman, this horrible woman, would be hired. That's the whole problem. That's, you know, the problem, is that you guys are all unanimous in your one siloed way of thinking.
This is the mainstream media. We know who they are. We knew before this happened. And they just played their hand in front of all. We know exactly who these. They were so pearl clutchy. And we were watching this in real time thinking, we see you. We totally see you. We know who you are. And it's obvious.
All right, folks. It is Good Friday. We are headed into the weekend, the holiest weekend. It is Easter weekend. I appreciate all of your support for the show. We crossed 100,000 subscribers because of you, and the last week has been on fire. Great conversation coming up with the chicks on the right. Amy Jo Clark and Miriam Weaver, you probably know them better than Daisy and Mock. If you are Chicks on the Right fans, you can catch them every morning. They're live at 8 a.m. A great show and a great conversation headed our way. What's going on at NBC? I mean, they are in meltdown mode. And then I want to talk to him a little about what Governor DeSantis is doing down in Florida. He's banning squatters. He's going after social media. I mean, all the things that we talk about should be happening. He's leading the way on it, and he's doing it in Florida. Why aren't we seeing more of that in Washington? Break it all down with him. Before I do that, I want to tell you about two of the amazing sponsors that help bring this show to you, to all of us, for free because of their support. Let me tell you about two of them, and then we're going to get into it with Chicks on the Right. All right, if you're an animal lover like I am, I want to tell you about the great work of Delta Rescue. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can check it all out right there. There's great videos. They show you what they do. It's a no-kill sanctuary. Notice that I didn't say shelter. Animal lovers, you're used to going to the shelter to rescue, right? Leo Grillo founded Delta Rescue as a no-kill sanctuary for life that dogs, cats, horses, and other animals can get the care that they need. The veterinary care, the nutrition care, as a place to run free, to enjoy the rest of their lives. But Delta Rescue only exists because of the contributions of people like you and me. $5, $25, $100, $1,000, a couple thousand, whatever you can spare if you're an animal lover. But more importantly, Leo Grillo, when he founded it, wanted it to be an enduring mission, something that went on well into the future. And to do that, we're asking people to check out deltarescue.org and go to the estate planning kit. So if you can make a contribution, great, but also go to the estate planning kit and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your estate to help make sure that that mission endures forever. Go to deltarescue.org, check out the great work that they do, make a contribution, and then download that estate planning kit to see if you can make it part of your estate. When crisis hits, when an emergency hits, will you be prepared? I know I will, because I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X in my house. And you can too if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer. 4patriots.com/Spicer. When the power goes out, whether that's a day, a couple days, a few weeks, maybe even a month, think about all the challenges that we face to our power grid, natural disasters and emergencies, you want to be ready. And with the Patriot Power Generator 2000X, you can power your refrigerator, devices, computers, tablets, phones, you name it. All the things that are important to you, your family, that can be taken care of. And you can bring the Patriot Power Generator into your house. No fumes, no gas, no noise. It's perfect. It's portable, and it charges on solar panels that come free with it. You don't have to worry about reloading it, bringing out gas, getting it filled, the fumes, the noise. No, the Patriot Power Generator is fully portable. It can go into your house. You can put it in your car, drive it somewhere, helping out a family friend. And again, it's completely powered by solar panels that come with it. So go to 4patriots.com/Spicer so that you are ready in an emergency or crisis. Ladies, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you. I know you guys start your day early, so it's nice for you to stick around and join us today.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
All right. I've been quasi-obsessed with this NBC Ronna McDaniel story all week. And as I said to the audience, it's not because of Ronna. Like, whether you like her or not, to me, this is a bigger story about how the media treats people on the right. And so the first thing I want to get is kind of like your impressions from this, because the narrative that the media is trying to construe right now is this has nothing to do with Republicans or Trump supporters. It's that she's an election denier. If she wasn't an election denier, we'd be glad to have her. I think that's BS. Mock, I'll start with you.
It is. I was going to say that, and I'm glad that you gave us the little warning about cussing, because I would have said the full word that you just used.
We are, you know, we're on cable, so I think it's legal, but it's still a family show, and it's Good Friday. It's Good Friday.
Yes. Let's, okay. We'll take it easy.
All right. That's right. Well, I mean, it's all such delicious fun to watch all of the, particularly the MSNBC hosts, where they were talking about just the morality of this decision that NBC had made to hire her, and then how grateful they were that NBC ultimately listened to the entire team, because they were unanimous in their outcry and their outrage that this woman, this horrible woman, would be hired. And I'm personally not a huge Ronna McDaniel fan in terms of the performance that she had at the RNC, but I find myself in a position where I want to defend her on this, because it is so absurd how clearly transparent all of those the media hosts were when they said we were unanimous in our desire to not have her here. And I'm like, that's the whole problem. That's the problem, is that you guys are all unanimous in your one siloed way of thinking.
I don't know if any of you guys remember Charlie Rangel. He was the New York Brooklyn congressman. And I was doing some trade work with the Bush administration, and we were trying to figure out if he was going to support us. And he looked at my boss one day and he goes, "I'm with you until I'm not." And I was like, that totally exemplifies NBC. We have your back until we don't. Daisy, yeah. I felt like I just think that this is such a cop out for all the media. They're like, no, we're not anti-Republican. We're not anti-Trump. It's just, if it wasn't for this small little thing, we would totally embrace you, even though we have no one else on our network that even comes close to this.
Right. We're anti the people who we don't think are the ones who are going to align with our values, right? Which are liberal values. I mean, it's like they ganged up on her, which, again, I also was not a big fan of Ronna McDaniel, what she did, and I hated having to defend her too, but they ganged up on her. They did the whole commie thing, you know, where they were just like, we would be fine with like a Liz Cheney or an Adam Kinzinger, you know, but we just don't like her. We don't want her being, because she may be just a little bit too far, like swinging the pendulum to the right. And God knows we can't have like an actual conservative on our airwaves. You know, we don't want that. Because, I mean, they show their true colors. You know, this is the mainstream media. We know who they are. We knew before this happened. And they just played their hand in front of all. We know exactly who they were. So pearl clutchy. And we were watching this in real time thinking, we see you. We totally see you. We know who you are. And it's obvious.
So, you know, the interesting thing, Mock, I know at some point in your career, you were in HR. You had some HR background, right?
I did. It's hard to believe that now.
This is where I want to reach into your expertise. Like, I was watching this happen on Sunday, right? And I tell people, I say it all the time on Sundays. I watch the shows so you don't have to. It's an addiction. I'm on step 8. I can't help it. I feel it's like some people, you know, hate watch things or whatever. Like, I want to just see how bad it is. And when I saw Chuck Todd go, "Our bosses owe you an apology."
Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself, or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? What, once at the RNC, she did say that, "Hey, I'm speaking for the party." I get that. That's part of the job. So what about here?
I thought to myself, of every boss that I've ever had of 20 plus years in the military, that's the one where the boss calls up and goes, "Hey, can you come see me for a second?"
Yeah.
I would just like your badge and we just locked you out of your computer, and today was your last day. Like, this was truly the tail wagging the dog. The idea that not just Chuck Todd, but then all the MSNBCers felt that they had the right to go on and mock their boss's hiring. I get it if they wanted to have a private meeting or a town hall. Even then, I'd be like, dude, who do you think you are? But the idea that they went on air and publicly chastised the people that pay their bills, I thought was unbelievable.
It was a complete spectacle, and clearly kind of orchestrated, I think, because, you know, if it was just Chuck Todd, you know, I think maybe the executive team could have felt comfortable with giving him a hand slap and maybe a couple weeks suspension at the very least. But because all of the hosts collectively decided to rip on this decision, I think they had some strength in numbers a little bit. I'm just, you know, this is a theory, but I think that they felt like they had some strength in numbers. And then Mika and Joe actually said
they were the
worst.
They
said out loud, I cannot believe we weren't consulted.
Right. I know. Like, you know what? Yeah, it's me, Joe Scarborough. How do you run this? In fact, the funny part about that, though, is I kept thinking it's actually when you read into it, it was him saying if we were consulted. And I think that the irony was you weren't. No one cares about your opinion, Joe.
Exactly.
It showed threadbare that they're like, do your show and go home. Like, we don't actually care what you think. We care about Maddow. But just answer me this from an HR standpoint, legally speaking, and I'm not trying to, but just you're the only one that I know with a background in this. Like, is that like a fireable offense? Could they have gone to Chuck Todd afterwards and said, "You going on air and publicly chastising us? You know, hey, I'm sorry, we already demoted you once. This is now a fireable offense. You're out."
I think so. I mean, I can't imagine that part of their contract doesn't have a statement in there somewhere that says you are not to publicly disparage your own employer. Like, I can't fathom that not being the case. So I would have thought that would have been a really easy way for them to let Chuck go. But again, it was everybody. It was all of their hosts collectively saying the same thing all at once, which was astonishing.
And what other job have you ever worked at where it's been like, oh my God, they didn't ask me about this hire? Unless it was a direct hire of mine. I don't remember ever being in corporate America and being like, I don't like that person, but like my bosses or the CEO didn't ask me about this hire. No one ever freaking asked me.
By the way, do you think that they asked, like, so for example, when Chuck Todd got hired or whatever, do you think that they asked the other people about Chuck Todd? Or do you think they think somehow they're special? I was like, wait a second.
Absolutely.
You didn't get, no one asked about you. You don't think they asked about Jen Psaki? I mean, like, that's not how it works.
Exactly.
So the thing that I found funny is what people I don't think fully appreciate is that this was Chuck Todd's redemption tour. He had been booted from MSNBC. The viewers hated him. The ratings were way down. And this was his lifeline to the left, his home, where he came from. He's a Democratic operative coming into this job. And I think that viewers felt that he wasn't hewing to the left enough. And he was trying to show, see, I am one of you guys. I'm chastising my own bosses. I'm criticizing Rana. Here I am. And I think this was his way of getting kudos from the left and trying to resurrect and what they always say about people on the right, humanize himself.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And, you know, the other interesting thing, too, is that likely MSNBC or whatever show Chuck Todd is on, if it's NBC, whatever, he probably got them a lot of views with that clip going viral. Right. So then, in essence, he's done them the right service, right? Because they want to make money. They want all the clicks, the views, the likes, all of that stuff. So I guess you got to take the good with the bad when it comes to Chuck Todd. Yes, he disparaged them, but then he also brought them presumably some revenue.
At least temporarily, because they probably thought they were going to get that with Rana. And maybe. They're not going to, you know?
So let's talk about brand, because what they have shown, I think you're right. They probably went up in ratings on the left. It was like, kudos, we fired you, da 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 da, you made the right decision. But brand-wise, I mean, look, I've dealt with them for, you know, at a corporate level for well over 10 years, interacting with some of their top brass and whatever. They want to be seen, from an NBC standpoint at least, maybe not an MSNBC standpoint, from an NBC standpoint, they want to be seen as independent, this trusted news source.
Yeah, okay.
I believe that this incident, Daisy, literally took them 10 steps backwards, because now
totally.
Everybody on the right says, okay, that's really who you are.
Yeah, because we absolutely saw their true colors. We know exactly who they are and what they believe. And it was that gang mentality where they all just went against her. And it was just, it was so transparent. Everything was transparent with what happened with Ronna McDaniel. It's like they don't want any other opposing viewpoints on the network, on either of the networks, and NBC or MSNBC. MSNBC, we all know what they are. I mean, give me a break. And then we thought, okay, well, maybe there's a little bit of like a glimmer of hope. And listen, I wasn't excited about the hire. Just, it's not like I was going to go watch it, you know, just willingly. We were going to probably use it for clips and whatnot. But it's fine. It would have been entertaining, to say the least. But I mean, I thought, okay, well, maybe there's just a little glimmer of and there's no hope. There's no hope at all, because they don't want any opposing viewpoints or anything at all that would remotely be conservative or Republican leaning.
You know what the thing is? I truly believe this, is that whether it's the New York Times or Politico or NBC, what they're really afraid of is you and me explaining to somebody. It's sort of like when I talk about Trump versus Biden and people go, how can you support him? I go, okay, well, just objectively talk about this. The border, energy security, you know, energy independence, the economy, foreign policy. We weren't in any wars. Russia wasn't hadn't annexed land for an entire 4 years. China wasn't as provocative. I mean, and people go, oh yeah. They don't want that point of view. They want to be able to talk about democracy under attack. They want to talk about Trump going to court and all this stuff. Mm. They actually don't want to talk about issues. They don't want to talk about the border. They don't want to talk about the invasion that's happening. They don't want to talk about the reality of the Biden crisis. I mean, just the other day, Biden said that he took the train many times, almost whatever it was, on a daily basis over the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
At about 1:30, container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware, in our train or by car.
It is a four-lane, traffic-only, car-only, truck-only highway. And it's like, no one said a word to me, because they don't want to call that out. They would say that was misinformation and Trump was lying. But when Biden does it, talks about taking a train over a bridge that only services cars and trucks. Well, we don't talk about that. I think that what they hate isn't necessarily just opposing views. They hate any alternative. They want you to believe that Biden and the left are right, and the right just doesn't exist. There is no alternative view. It's not that it's wrong or opposing. It doesn't exist. Look at us. We have Michael Steele on the show. He's a Republican. He supports Joe Biden. See, we have two,
But that's why they spend so much time calling us all the obes and the ifs, right? Like racist and transphobic and sexist and misogynist and all the things that they call us, because it shuts down actual conversations about policy, about issues, about all the actual things that are going on. Because it's intellectually lazy.
But
you don't have to talk about issues.
But here's the thing. They keep saying that Ronna was an election denier and that's why we didn't have her on. Listen, mm-hmm. Here's the thing. You can call me whatever you want, but did Pennsylvania follow their constitution? No. Did Wisconsin follow their voting regulations? No. Those are facts. Those are not about denying an election or not. Those are true facts. In fact, Pennsylvania had a Democrat appeals court rule against it in the last couple of days. Their constitution didn't allow early voting, and they went ahead and did it anyway. Katie, who cares? To call that election denial, in fact, they're the ones who are denying the reality. These organizations aren't following the laws and the regulations of their states. And if to say that somebody's an election denier because they go, gosh, you guys didn't follow your laws, because they don't want you. Again, when I talk to people and have this conversation and they go, well, I can't believe you have a problem with the election. I said, well, okay, here's what Pennsylvania's constitution says. Here's what Wisconsin's voting regulations say. Mm-hmm. Here's what they did. Do you think that's a problem? They go, well, yeah. I go, oh, so it's not me. This gets back to this idea. They don't want you to know the truth.
Yeah.
Well, and the truth is, all of their policies suck. And then, and now the world is in a world of hurt, essentially, yeah, because of the policy. So they don't have that record to run on. And so it's safest for them to just be like, oh, save democracy. Trump's terrible for democracy or
right,
whatever. Or to try to gaslight us on every single issue. We were talking on our show this morning about how they're trying to gaslight us about crime rates. They want us to believe, even though our eyes and our ears and our all of our senses tell us otherwise, that violent crime is down simply yeah, because they're using stats from unprosecuted crime.
Well, and exactly. By the way, don't you love that? They decriminalize crime, right? So these things, or police don't actually take the report anymore, and then they go, well, right, the stats don't back it up. Well, no kidding. Yep.
No prosecution.
By the way, you know what's funny? I watched this Today Show piece, and if anyone wants to look at it, Stephanie Gosk was the I call them media types. They're not reporters. She was the media type that ran the story, and they're talking about women in New York that are randomly just getting beaten.
The stories are harrowing.
I was literally just walking, and a man came up and punched me in the face. Oh my God, it hurts so bad.
College student Michaela Tonato says she was just leaving class in Manhattan.
So I just got punched in the face. Walking home.
He hit me right on my cheekbone. This doesn't hurt as bad as the concussion does.
So let's just be clear on this arc. You guys do a story in your mainstream legacy media outlets that tell us that women and people are being attacked. The governor of New York sends out the National Guard throughout the city and on the subways. Mm-hmm. And then you tell us that crime isn't a problem. The stats don't match up. Well, one, you're the people who ran the story. Two, the Democratic governor who wanted to defund the police is sending out the National Guard. And then how dare you idiots think that crime is going up? What are you, stupid?
Isn't it crazy?
How would you come up with this conclusion?
It's nuts. It's like we're being gaslit all over the place. They do the same thing with the economy. The economy is in shambles. And they're like, no, I mean, your eggs aren't expensive. Like all the things that you're buying aren't expensive. And we're like, but we're living it. It's nuts. And it's all over the place. But it's not just the executive branch. Yeah,
they'll do the story on the Today Show of Good Morning America about how Americans are struggling with eggs and da-da-da-da. And then we'll go, wow, you're right. Eggs cost money. And they go, see, this is it. You're buying into the right-wing narrative. And we're like, no, dude. You guys laid the predicate for the narrative. You told us that. Then you get mad at us for believing the story that you posted because we're actually blaming Biden for it. If we hadn't blamed Biden and we were somehow could pin this on Trump, they'd be like, see, this is exactly the point.
Yeah.
We're just
living our lives. We're just living our lives every day and experiencing the actual suck that Miriam just mentioned.
Yeah.
And they don't live that.
Can I jump back? I hate to do this. There was a question I want to ask both of you that I asked Michael Wiley, the new RNC chairman, yesterday. I just want to go back and put a pin in the NBC Rana story. There are some, including Chairman Wiley, who believe, hey, we Republicans, conservatives need to go to all places and spread our message, whatever. I've had it with NBC in particular. And in 2016, in fact, when I was at the RNC, we banned them from hosting a debate. They were pissed. They went nuts on me. But I was like, why would we do that? That's malpractice, allowing them to host a debate. And I asked Chairman Wiley, why are we going to credential them to our convention? Why are we allowing people, not allowing, why wouldn't we ask people not to go on them, Republican officials, especially RNC officials? And he was like, well, where do you guys come down? I feel like too many times we get sucked into, we should be better. We should do this. Screw it. Why are we giving them the legitimacy of allowing Republican officials to go on, asking them to come into basically our living room? Hey, why don't you come cover the convention so that Rachel Maddow can crap all over us and our candidate? And then we get mad at their coverage. We're the ones who created it. Where do you guys come down on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's like what we've got, how many on our side when it comes to coverage that is friendly coverage, I guess, for conservatives. I don't know.
Fair.
Yeah. I guess friendly is probably not the right word. Fair coverage. So, I mean, if you want to have coverage, you've got to invite more than what, three people? It's like what? And now I guess maybe we have to rely more on alternative media, which we're included in that.
Yes.
And alternative media is winning nowadays.
Right.
Alternative media is kicking the butt of the mainstream media. So I think that's where the RNC needs to really start focusing its attention. And that is on people like, you know, like the Tuckers and the, you know, the Daily Wires and the Breitbarts and the people who are the alternatives. And that is where most and us, you know, the little guys, and the people on the right are starting to get and have been getting their news, their information from Twitter and from places that are not, I don't watch the mainstream media. We don't get our stuff for our show from the mainstream media. We get it from, you know, alternative news sources, because that's where the truth is. And if you don't want to get a skewed vision of the world, that's where you go to get actual factual information.
And so, you also get stories that you won't get because they're not going to cover
right. What's
happening at the border.
They filter.
I was thinking about this, by the way, in the context of this interview, right? They always talk about, you brought up democracy and whatever. Democracy is, you know, the legitimate vote of one person versus the legitimate vote of another. And if all of these people are coming in through our southern border, who they're basically trying to grant asylum to, who will then become citizens, who broke the law to come in, who they want to call newcomers now, like, that's undermining democracy. Undermining democracy.
Without question. Yeah.
I hear your point about, you know, do you invite them? Do you let them participate when they've been so egregiously awful? And I get it, because there's a part of me that's like you, where I'm just like, screw them. They don't get to come. They don't, you know, just ban their credentials, whatever. But at the same time, I think back to how DeSantis started out his early campaign,
Yeah. Kind
of refusing to do some of those lefty shows. And I think it ended up hurting him, because he is somebody that would have been really effective at, for example, going on The View and telling those witches what's what. And he didn't do it. And I feel like that actually ended up hurting him. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that ended up hurting him.
So let me ask you this. Can we, to use one of my favorite words, can we bifurcate this? I agree. DeSantis schools these guys. When I go on, I almost sit down and want to get popcorn, because I'm like, all right, go for it.
Right.
But is there a difference between going on, say, The View, and then inviting them to the convention and saying, here are the credentials? I get it. I watched Marco Rubio school Jonathan Carl the other day. I watched Nancy Mace go after George. There are certain people that are really good at it. Byron Donalds, he's awesome at it. But there's a difference between that and going to the convention or having them host a debate, which the RNC allowed NBC to do. The DNC wouldn't have allowed Fox to do that. Why are we doing this?
I agree with you, Sean.
Because
they have a sole purpose, and that is to like seek and destroy. And that's because you know what they're going in there to do. Because if a Rachel Maddow goes to an RNC convention, she only has bad intentions.
Right.
It's 100%. So I agree with you on that.
One of the things I loved about President Trump when I was at the White House and then the rest of his 4 years is he refused to attend the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And the reason I thought that was a big deal is that it's a bunch of lefties who hire a far left comedian who then just makes fun of Republicans. And that's their First Amendment right. They have a right of assembly. They have a right to speak whatever. And there's a freedom of press, right? All in the First Amendment. God bless you. Go do what you want. But to sit there and be a potted plant and to legitimize their dinner and be like, oh, see, it was bipartisan. The president was there. Republicans were there. My view is, you want to go have your leftist dinner? Go for it. Have it. Have fun. Bring your Hollywood guests and all of your Planned Parenthood friends. But then don't ask me to come. I don't want to be there. And I think that the point that I've made is that Republicans are just legitimizing when they do that. And so there's a difference between maybe going on The View, if you're Ron DeSantis or you can handle it, than saying, hey, we want you to come to our event that we're hosting so that you can mock us.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that a lot over the past 14 years about how conservatives, Republicans, we've been very polite, and we tend to just take the high road and do that. And I think it's about time that we, you know, stop doing that, because it's like the old adage, what you teach people how to treat you.
Yep.
And I think, you know, in the case of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he was like, yeah, you're not going to treat me like crap. I'm not going to do that.
If you're like me and looking to secure your financial future, then I want you to do me a favor. Call my friends at Bishop Gold, 844-984-1616, or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and have a conversation with them, or check out the materials on the website, bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, about how you can add precious metals to your investment strategy. Maybe you have an old 401k, an IRA, or you're just looking to diversify your investment strategy. I called them. I had a conversation about where I am in my financial planning, how we could add financial metals to my strategy, right? So I invested my money with them. You get hit up from a lot of groups all over. I see it every day when I watch TV or I'm online. I trust the people at Bishop Gold Group. They're full of integrity, knowledge about the industry, about investments and strategies. call them and help them create a strategy that works for you based on the assets that you have. Again, maybe it's an old 401k or an IRA that you have sitting there that they can help you do it. You can talk to them about holding on to the metals. They can liquidate them for you. They can hold on to them for you. But call Bishop Gold Group 1-844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your financial journey with precious metals. And you get a free gift. I know this sounds so in the weeds, but it was a battle that I've, and you have to really understand the machinations and the logistics of how the convention works. But when I was at the RNC, we had a group of people at the convention who would outsource the credentialing, right? So it would go to the, they call it the house gallery. And so they would just credential anybody that could get into the house gallery. That screwed a lot of our conservative friends who wanted to cover it. And as independent media, like you we were just talking about, has grown, mm-hmm. and you've got channels that are getting more views per night than a CNN, I'm like, why are we not taking care of them? Why are we not? It's not even a question of one versus the other. It's like, hey, Tim Pool or Dave Rubin or Sean Spicer, yeah. Chicks on the Right, make an effort to bring them because they're actually on the team, as opposed to saying, how much more space can we give CNN?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Great point.
Oh my gosh, I agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not even a one or the other. There's just, I was like, okay, we'll have 10 seats up in the 400 nosebleed section so you guys can watch it. And it's like, dude, that's not it. At some point, take care of your friends, the people that are actually covering you that are interested in the issues. I can't remember which one of you just brought up Ron DeSantis, but I want to actually pivot because I thought he did two things this week. Actually, three, if you count the Disney thing. But I want to start with the squatter legislation that he brought up. And he did. I made this issue, I think it was at the beginning of the week. It's been a long week, or it could have been the end of last week, about this recent phenomenon. No, I know what it was when I had Alan Dershowitz on the show. And I was talking about, I just didn't understand legally how somebody enters your property, plops down and says, this is mine. Right. Now you have to go to court and get me out. Like what, like in, when I grew up, that was called trespassing.
I mean, right. Like, exactly. I mean, yeah, you're literally coming, they're stealing your house.
Yes.
I can't. It's so hard for me to wrap my brain around this.
I'm sure you guys saw that New York thing where the woman goes in and the cops arrest her.
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's insanity.
The fact that there is actually, that people actually made legislation to protect the squatters mm-hmm. is like
I know.
Why do we have to do this? Like, I mean, I live in Texas and I feel like because we have a little cabin. We live in a little ranch and we have a little cabin on the front of our property. And my husband and I talk about this and I'm like, if he came to me yesterday and he's like, if somebody set up shop in that cabin without us knowing it, we would just have to deal with it. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like, I would just say this. I have a feeling in Texas, you all know how to deal with squatters.
Right. It's like, I think that's the, you say right. FAFO. That's what you say around here. You that's don't right. like it's, and that's, I just can't imagine. Like, that's why when we did see the story from New York, it's so hard for me to wrap my brain around that. And you're right. I'm from the generation where that just doesn't happen. And I cannot believe that we are having lawmakers and governors have to deal with this. Like, what is going on with our country?
I think have to deal with it is when you have a problem. Like, it's like, hey, I have to deal with this accident and I have to, they're bringing this problem on themselves.
Yes.
When you enter, I mean, I think I saw this one sheriff, it was a clip on social media and the guy was like, well, if you break into a house legally, you can fire on the guy. And I'm like, so wait, in some places in America, you come into my house, I have the right to protect myself. In some cases, they can call the cops and have me arrested. But yeah. this shouldn't be a problem. This is mm-hmm. a basic principle of like our country that, you know, property rights. And yes. so this idea that I thought that DeSantis, and this is where he has done such a good job as governor, is, mm-hmm. and it wasn't a ton of fanfare. There was a press conference, but it wasn't like he threw out the bells and whistles. He just solved a problem. And yeah, said, you know what? Yeah. Not going to happen in Florida. It's not going to happen. And same thing, you know, obviously in Texas, I don't think that'll ever be a problem in Texas or Montana or South Dakota. Mm-hmm. But like, I think what I thought was cool about how DeSantis did it is it was sort of like, you could tell there was an issue. It was a concern. And it's like, let's just nip this in the bud and have it done. And boom.
Very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's very good at that. He's very good at seeing a problem and then handling the problem, which is what executives should do.
Yeah.
And Jesse Waters made a great point about that last night when he was talking about how he is the perfect example of representative democracy. The constituents say, hey, there's a problem here. Here's what we need you to do about it. And DeSantis, as the representative, as the politician, says, I see a problem. Yo, I will solve it.
Yeah.
And then he just does it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why doesn't this happen nationwide? I was
everywhere.
Telling Amy Jo in our talk this morning, my governor in Indiana, I don't even know what he's done the past couple of terms. Like, he's of utterly no consequence. Mm-hmm. And it's always Ron DeSantis and a handful of other governors that are in charge of leading. Every issue.
That's the key word that you just touched on, right? I talked about courage earlier this week with a bunch of candidates. And I said, what's lacking in Washington is courage. Standing up and saying, okay, I'm willing to fight. I'm willing to fight for the border. I'm willing to fight against China's ascent. I'm willing to fight against wasteful spending. But this is what you just said was so critical, right? So if you look what's happening in Washington, you go, who the heck is leading? You look, and again, I don't live in Indiana, so I don't want to comment on what's happening there. But when you watch what happens in Florida, you go, see, that's what a leader does. A leader sees a problem, solves it. And what it shows me is that every time people say politics is broken, it's like, no, it's not actually. There are certain people that are broken because I look around the country and I look at some of the stuff that, like, when Greg Abbott had a problem in Texas, what did he do? He said, great, here's how we're going to solve it. We're going to put up fencing. I'm going to deputize all of these law enforcement officials to throw people out. I'm going to put the National Guard in place. Like, that's a leader. What Ron DeSantis did on squatting, that's a leader. It takes people to lead. If you don't lead, that doesn't mean the system's broken. It means you're broken.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there are other leaders across the country that'll look at those, you know, at the Ron DeSantis's and the Abbott's, and they'll be like, oh, I think I'll do that too. You know, maybe that is such a good idea, where they should have done it to begin with. We do see a lot of that. You know what I mean? Where the leaders are, they lack the courage, you know, like you're saying, to just go ahead and do it to begin with. So we're seeing a lot of that. But yes, I mean, I commend the DeSantis's and the Abbott's and even like the Kristi Noems and people like that who are out there leading the charge and doing the things that need to be done and listening to their constituents. And I mean, that's what a good CEO of a company does.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that he did this week is it says Florida is going to have one of the most restrictive social media bans for minor if it withstands the legal things. The bill would ban social media accounts for children under 14 and require parental permission for 14 and 15 year olds. Thank God. I mean, what do you guys both think of what he's doing on that front? And should we be seeing more of it throughout the country?
My only question is how does that even work? Like, I don't understand the mechanics of it and how a governor in one state can just say, we're going to somehow block under 14-year-olds. That said, I have absolutely no problem with this decision. I just, you know, to me, it's like he's recognizing this is a terrible thing for youngsters. There's piles and piles and piles of studies about this.
Yeah.
To me, it's like he's saying this is the new cigarette. And we're putting an age limit on the cigarette selling, and now you're going to have to get parental consent to use it if you're over 14. I don't see any problem with it.
Yeah, I'm with Mock on this, except for you're right. I don't know how you enforce it.
I think there's technology. I mean, I guess I'm with you. Like, I can barely get my computer going, so but I understand that, like, it has to do with whether they can geofence stuff. So if you're in Florida, you can't download it. Then there's age verification. But I get that part of it. But I'm like, again, this gets back to lead and then, you know, figure it out.
And I'm a mother of a 14-year-old. And I will say, you know, stalk your kids. Be a parent. Maybe we should like be pushing that more in this country, is be a good parent. Be a present parent. Be a stalky parent where you are all up in their business. And you are, you know, stalking them. And if they are on social media, you know, make sure you understand what that social media is all about. Either keep them off of it entirely, or if you pick and choose what social media they're on, make sure that you have all their passwords, that you are all up in their DMs, that you are stalking them, and you know what they're on and who they're talking to every single day. That's how I feel about that.
There's a new book out this week from Jonathan Haidt, who was the previous author of Coddling of the American Mind. I don't know if either of you guys are aware of it, but I just ordered it. And the studies, he looks at social media for kids and just talks about how, frankly, destructful it is. How the suicide rates are up, depression is up, especially among 13 to whatever it is, 16-year-olds. And the cigarette analogy is perfect. Mock, I think that like we're watching this happen and there's so many people who are like holding their hands going, I just don't know what to do. And it's like, what do you mean you don't know what to do? If your kid was sitting there in your home, letting mm-hmm. up cigarette after cigarette, you'd be like, get that out of your mouth, put it out, like whatever. And we're sitting there like, God, I just don't know what to do.
Exactly.
We are being warned. And it's not just the depression, the suicide rates, but then we hear all these messages about what TikTok is doing to spread disinformation. And to captivate these kids and to create a degree of addiction. There's days in which I don't get it. When I look at our leaders, our elected officials, again, maybe Ron DeSantis doesn't have the perfect answer in Florida because it may not work out great, but at least he's trying to solve it. And right. So many of these other guys sit there wringing their hands like, I just don't know what to do. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, this to me has got to be the greatest threat that we face when you have the entire next generation of Americans who have an exponential higher rate of suicide, who have an undeniable higher rate of depression and anxiety. And we're all sitting around like, gosh, I just wish there was an answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it would be, I mean, ideally, it starts at home, as Daisy said. I mean, to right. her point, you want parents to be doing the right thing. Unfortunately, in many households, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. And so in some way, I think what DeSantis is trying to do is make it easier for parents in some respects to know that they don't have to succumb to the pressure that their kids feel when their friends
right.
are on social media. So if you've got a 14-year-old who's like, well, so-and-so is on that on TikTok, how come I can't be on TikTok? This actually helps parents a little bit with not having to deal with that pressure that, and they can say, well, it's not legal. You know what I mean? Like
right.
you're not allowed to be on it. So it does take a little bit of the pressure away. But again, if kids know that, listen, all it takes is parental consent, you know, you've got some wiggle room there. But I understand the sentiment because it is like cigarettes in that, you know, there's no benefit, almost no benefit of
yeah.
kids that young being on it without tons of supervision. Like, you know what I mean? And so a lot of it is just due to the pressure that they feel from their friends having access, from being able to chat with them that way. It's hard. It's hard
it
for
is.
Kids to stay off of a smartphone right now at a young, young age. It's just hard. And I feel for parents who are trying to do the right thing, but also their kids are getting the pressure and then they're getting the pressure. So if it alleviates a little bit of pressure, I think that's a good thing.
It's hard for adults to stay off of social media.
Yeah.
I mean, you got these kids who are 14.
What are you
15,
talking about?
Right. Because like the 14 to 16 year olds who are addicted to their phones, their parents are looking at them going, you need to get off your phones while they're scrolling TikTok. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my gosh. It's,
oh, no,
it's
no. There's
crazy.
Plenty of times, there's plenty of dinners when I'm trying to have a conversation with my wife. And then she's just like, are you literally scrolling right now? And I'm like, no.
It's like, I mean, you got to admit, because you're probably like us. I think you're sort of in the same, maybe you're probably younger than us, Sean, maybe a little bit younger.
It's the moisturizer. It's a moisturizer.
It's a really good skincare. But I miss the 80s. This is why we miss, yeah. we talk about it all the time. We miss the 80s and 90s before we became this heads down, you know, not intimately engaged in conversation generation. You know, it's, I weep for my kids when it comes to that. I really wish they had more of that, you know?
And that is the big issue, is that it's both a peer pressure thing. But then, I mean, I know that there's this struggle, right? That you can't as a parent be there 24/7. And
no.
so you can say, hey, I want you to take this phone to baseball practice or, you know, to glee club after school, whatever it is. But then don't you dare look at a video that's getting spread
right.
or that your friends are sending you. It just doesn't, it's hard to be there. And that's why I'm not a big believer, but for the same reason, I think the cigarette analogy is spot on. We wouldn't say, okay, parents, if you don't want your kids to smoke, just don't give them access to cigarettes. It's
right.
like at some point the government has a right and an obligation to protect us. And if we know—
That's its only job, actually.
Right, exactly.
That is their number one job, yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. heck, they're giving out free phones down at the border. So maybe that's part of the problem, is that they can't help themselves giving it out. But I think part of this, though, is political. The Dems know that these messages that are being sent out benefit them. And that's the problem, is that they don't want to be, like, they know that TikTok in particular, I think, leans to a voting demographic that largely benefits them. And I think that's part of the problem, is that Democrats don't want to give up a political edge. And I think that's unfortunate, because as we said, I mean, there's a real health crisis here for the next generation of Americans. And And I just don't think that I see too many of our elected officials standing up and saying, I'm willing to take the heat for this.
Right, because that's why the White House is still on TikTok.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That to me, there. I mean, granted, their videos are horrible. The idea that he's talking about chocolate chip cookies and Mrs. Kelsey, I'm like, if you thought this was helping you. But that's again, the hypocrisy, right? It's like, don't put your kid on it, but then we're going to put a video that we hope reaches your kid.
Exactly. Yeah, but they also use people like the Harry Sissons, and they have, you know, celebrities that'll go out there and stump for them. I mean, they... Democrats have always been very good at that kind of stuff. They know exactly where culture lives. And
but you know the other thing is that the media is great on this. Like, I watch these segments in the morning, and it's funny, despite TikTok being a spreader and a purveyor of misinformation, they have no problem talking about the segments that they do about, you know, we're on TikTok today and we did this on TikTok. They'll tell you about it, and yet then they'll get all pissed off about misinformation. It's like, okay, well, you just promoted one of the biggest platforms of it.
Yeah, it's exact. Oh gosh, I loathe TikTok. I loathe it.
Yeah. All right. Well, ladies, thank you for joining me as we head into Easter weekend. I hope that you guys have a blessed Easter weekend. I appreciate you making the time to be here, and we will see you soon.
This was great. Thank you so much. It really was. Thank you.
All right, folks. I hope you all have a blessed Easter weekend. I look forward to seeing you back here Monday. We've got a great group of guests lined up all weekend. Monday, we're going to take a look at Hollywood in a way that you probably have never, ever seen before, from people who are being successful, but Hollywood doesn't want you to know about it. I was shocked at the conversation that we're about to have. So Monday is a not miss show. Dave Rubin's going to be here as well next week. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Make sure you continue to subscribe. YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple, all of those places help us grow. Thank you for being here. We'll see you back on Monday.